like kind of as a product person, this is actually where you kind of go, well, they're kind of treating it like one file, like this, like they're almost treating the controller as almost an interface into a helper. Like, obviously, I'm sure some engineers are going to be like, that's not what interface means, but.
That is Greg Whitworth, Senior Director of Product Management here at Salesforce. I'm Josh Burke, your host for the Salesforce Developer Podcast. And here on the podcast, you'll hear stories and insights from developers for developers. Today, we're going to sit down and talk with Greg about some of the distinctions about our old component framework, Aura, and our current modern one, Lightning Web Components. But first, we're going to start, as we often do, with his early years with a computer.
Probably playing video games on the old school. I mean, I don't even know if it was a Mac or a Windows at this point, but you remember the old tank games where it's like geometric like figures, but they're just lines and you shoot like triangles at other tanks.
I can't believe I can't remember the name of it because it's something really straightforward, like Battle Tank.
Something like that. There's that. And then, of course, Oregon Trail.
Right, of course.
Definitely at school, but yeah.
The best school indoctrinated game ever.
Exactly.
When did you first start working not just on web development, but on standards committees as well?
Oh, standards committees kind of came in actually, 2011, I think I started getting 2011, 2012, something like that. Started getting involved in web platform tests. And then... Okay. Yeah, got more involved in the CSS working group and from there Open UI and so on.
And we kind of got through this in the last interview, but just sort of as a recap, how do you see the involvement in companies like Salesforce and Microsoft, like having a seat at those committee tables? And how do you think that kind of drives the evolution of web standards?
Oh, it's super important. I think anybody happening to listen to this podcast, it kind of doesn't matter how you're using Salesforce, you're using web technology in some form or fashion. So while the team that, the teams I've engaged with heavily engage with, Lightning Web Components heavily involves web component standards discussions, CSS, and so on. There's all kinds of stuff, whether it be protocols. Probably the most engagement I actually do is with a bunch of browser vendors as they want to deprecate APIs or things of that nature. So it's very important from a relationship perspective to ensure that, our customers actually continue to have a great experience no matter which browser they're in, what technology they're using.
Got it. And to kind of round that up, how would you describe your current job at Salesforce?
Oh, goodness. So I'm a product manager. So I work across a few different technologies, LWC, LWR Node, as well as standards web platform browser engagements. So, but yeah, anything and everything customer related, how we can continue to improve the platform to make our customers successful is everything that I'm focused on.
Nice. Now, on the show, we've talked about Aura's place kind of in terms of its evolution at the company and frameworks. How would you describe Aura in like the family of frameworks, especially compared to things like LWC?
In the family of Salesforce frameworks, again, it's super popular. It's got a lot of great capabilities that people lean on, especially given my close proximity to LWC. And I'm sure this is something we'll get into is there's a lot of capabilities that kind of unfortunately have hindered people from being able to move from Aura to LWC. Mm-hmm. But I think it's, I wouldn't say generally loved by our customers. We actually sent out a survey, that actually kind of this, which hopefully, we'll share the results for in a few months, the results, the outputs from that. But, it's not necessarily loved. And then if you look at the broader industry, so anybody hiring developers, LWC is much more in line with, what industry developers kind of expect. If you're going to boot camps or going to college these days, learn to become a web developer, or is very proprietary to Salesforce.
Which, I mean, I think there's a lot of advantages to web standards. We've talked about like, overall speed and the less technology that's required to use as a shim, et cetera. But touch on that a little bit, if I am a React developer, how much easier is it for me to adopt LWC as opposed to sticking with Aura?
Yeah, it's I would almost say it's night and day. And this is speaking from personal experience, coming from working on standards and coming into Salesforce, having to kind of learn, hey, here's where, you hook up to your class constructor rather than just, hey, doing a JavaScript import of a class for, thinking of Apex and so on. All the ways in which data binding works, it being, a two-way binding by default. Yeah, it doesn't follow any of the industry paradigms. It doesn't matter if it's React, Vue, Svelte, any of those. So yeah, it's a relatively steep learning curve.
Yeah. And one of the things that always got me about Aura was its, shall we say, fondness for a very specific file structure. How does that compare to how I could set up a component in LWC?
So it's verbose, for sure.
Yeah.
There's numerous different, like I would say the one that kind of befuddles me probably the most is the fact that you have both a controller and helper JS files. So when you go, if you are in VS Code or use any of the code builder extensions, you create just a Lightning Aura component versus a Lightning Web component, the scaffolding of the component files is drastically different. And quite often when I'm looking at various Aura component code, people within the controller JS just call out quickly to a helper JS, which kind of implies, and this is where, like, kind of as a product person, this is actually where you kind of go, well, they're kind of treating it like one file. Like this,
right.
Like, they're almost treating the controller as almost an interface into a helper. Like, obviously, I'm sure some engineers are going to be like, that's not what interface means, but you kind of get my full point. It's a pass through.
Yes. Right.
And within LWC, you end up with one JavaScript file. Likewise, you know, with all of the integrations into Salesforce, whether it be your builders and so on, in Aura components, you have a .design file and then a, you know, component meta file. In LWCs, you only have one.
Mm-hmm.
And then even then, it's even not a one-to-one there, because in Aura, likewise, you sometimes define this in your like .cmp folder. Mm-hmm. Or file. So it's one of those things where it's kind of spread around. And this goes back to when you think about the on-ramp to just learning Salesforce as a whole, as a product, as a platform to build with it, to then add in these layers of the developer experience, the learning curve again. It just, unfortunately, is just an added barrier. So something that we're looking to help facilitate people migrating over to LWC.
Got it. I was laughing a lot through that because I believe you described every Aura component I ever created. I'm trying to think of an instance where I didn't do exactly what you're describing, controller to helper, do a bunch of stuff in helper. And in LWC, it's not that you're stuck with a single JavaScript. You have flexibility. You can add, if you have a utility JavaScript, for instance, you can bring that in.
For sure.
You make the choices as opposed to Aura kind of enforcing how it wants it to be seen.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a lot more flexible. That said, we've gotten feedback of like, you know, some folks wanting, you know, single file components similar to how, you know, Vue is structured and the capability of having more folder management. So like, those are things we're always, you know, entertaining. So like,
right.
You know, and this is true with any framework. They, you know, have to do something in order to go compile, but we're always open to feedback and, you know, use cases where people are like, here's a better folder management. So it's not necessarily dogging itself on Aura. It's just this is how technologies evolve, and we kind of notice, you know, ways in which things can be better. And it's like LWC, you know, made that choice. And personally, having to learn both of them, you know, I found LWC is way more approachable than Aura.
Right. Well, and before we turn this into an Aura bashing session, it's probably good to note the timing.
Yeah, that's not the goal.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
It was innovative at its time, and we released it before these industry standards really started to, I want to use the word congeal, but before they formed, really. So, you know, it's sort of a victim of its own timing, so to speak.
For sure. And that is definitely something I want to reiterate. It's not about, bashing, or it's more of, hey, here's the goodness that LWC can bring to the table and why we're investing in it and the changes that we made.
Right.
Yeah, it's definitely not the goal is to not necessarily bash on Aura itself, because it had its time in the sun. And to your point, time had a big thing to do with it.
Right. I mean, I still think remote objects in Visual Force was actually pretty cool tech. It doesn't mean I'm ever going to use it again.
I'll have to take your word for that. I've actually never had to go use that. So I'll take your word for that.
It was an interesting, like, I always joke that when Visual Force first came out, it was the least JavaScript friendly container ever. I know it wasn't intentionally designed that way, but I like to use the anecdote that if you didn't spread out your iterator correctly, it would parse your tag as a script tag and then tell you that it couldn't process the script tag and break your JavaScript. And it got from there to basically an empty slate that was like, hey, do no harm, but write whatever JavaScript you want, and we'll run it without having to do, like, basically it was standard controllers for JavaScript. Like, you could talk directly to the data layer kind of thing.
Gotcha.
So it was neat, but you know, Aura kind of started getting us talking about like components and single page apps and stuff like that, and getting away from a view state. And now we're, you know, into the world of standards. I was like the old school JavaScript guy who then jumped into the latest version of ECMAScript, and there was stuff like import tags. Gotcha. And it was like culture shocking to me. But then it's like my Java skills kicked in. I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. like, this is so much better. Did you have any experience like that? Or did you just kind of, have you just been sort of learning JavaScript as it's been rolling out?
Well, to your point of having kind of lived in the standards world.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been able to watch those kind of land and evolve. So to your point of, you know, add imports, the introduction of class, the introduction of let versus var and const and all those types of things. As those lines have just been awesome, because for those of us that have, you know, authored in typed languages or other languages, and we kind of see the value in those while also understanding the value of a scripting language, it's been great kind of watching that kind of coalescence to improve the developer experience, which actually makes a lot of syntax highlighting and all those different capabilities kind of a lot easier in us being able to kind of grok. You go into somebody else's code and being able to kind of understand, oh, that can't change, you know, versus, you know, everything was just var for the longest time. But yeah.
Right.
I love how the language is continuing to evolve and continuing to improve the developer experience.
Yeah, completely agree. And for people who kind of are going through that culture shock a little bit, I have to say, once I kind of compare it to those 3D images at the mall, like once you just let your eyes unfocus a little bit and then you realize the nice structure that you're looking at, and just, I think you hit the nail on the head right there, how much easier it is to read a random set of code as opposed to the Wild West that it was, that JavaScript was when I grew up.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Now, talking a little bit more about the data layer, before the data layer, let's talk a little bit about eventing, because it's a common thing that anybody who has to do a slightly complicated application is going to run into. How does Aura eventing compare to Lightning?
Yeah, so Aura eventing, like you have the Aura event stack that you can basically set up an Aura event queue, which basically any other Aura component can then subscribe to that Aura event and basically, you know, listen to it. LWC has a native web component eventing. So basically you can do eventing propagation. And technically those can be subscribed to as well, just in the native stack. However, unfortunately, this may not cross shadow boundaries. You may not know which ones are actually available to you to subscribe to. And so what we recommend is using a Lightning message service, which basically you end up with an XML file where you go describe that channel. And then, like we were talking about earlier in JavaScript, you actually then import via your add import into your component the Lightning message service in that specific channel, which again, you then are basically evoking this channel and passing some data, some type of event that you want to pass around to various components across the Salesforce application, which can then be subscribed to. And ultimately, you can then do whatever logic you wanted to based on that event's changing.
Got it. And so moving from the messaging down to that data layer, for data integration, we've got things that Aura didn't have, like the at-wire annotation and Lightning data service. How does that change the game between accessing the data layer between Aura and Lightning?
Yeah, it drastically changes the game. And the fact that, like, one thing that's important to note is that, you know, at-wire is using a standard called decorators from JavaScript. So it's at-wire and is in a lot of respects a simplicity on the base fetch API call that is a standard. But the real magic happens in that we actually do a bunch of caching within LDS or the Lightning data service, which owns the app wire. So if you make calls through LDS, we actually will cache those things if things haven't changed. So ultimately you greatly improve your user's experience.
Because that really rounds up what my next question was going to be. Like this is seriously more performant than having to go back to the well every time.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it saves you your users a ton of consternation
Now, data services also gives us access to GraphQL. We've covered that on the show a little bit, but give us a recap. What is GraphQL and how does it compare to SQL?
Yeah. GraphQL is, in my opinion, one of those kind of like breakthrough technologies that anybody that's written it in, it's not even Salesforce specific, where you've had to write, you know, a JavaScript application and you're kind of like, all right, well, here's all the data I have, and it's spread across, you know, these five different REST API endpoints. And so, hey, I'm going to go basically build out a JSON object. Let's say, yeah, I want, you know, profiles, you know, username and their address. And then over here, I want, you know, the content object and something else. If you were going to go hit this with SQL, you would have to build out that query completely and potentially make numerous different calls. So as it relates to GraphQL, you can just say, hey, Salesforce, here is the data that I need across the different objects. And you can also provide variables. GraphQL, again, is an industry standard. You can provide variables into this. And you'll say, here is specifically the information that I need. And it will return you one JSON object. So you're not having to pull a piecemeal across numerous different REST APIs. You can just hit one REST API endpoint. And again, they're adding support for at-wire support. So this brings in all of those benefits we were just talking about for caching. And again, the caching in the SQL queries prior didn't exist, whereas on the GraphQL layer, those will now, you know, exist. So if you're hitting the endpoint and you're asking for the same content and it hasn't changed, you'll get the same response without having to.
Got it. So currently for production, we can access GraphQL. It's not on the wire, so we can do the cool JSON object, but in the future, we'll get the performance of that caching. What does that roadmap look like, Matt?
Yeah, good question. Yeah. So the GraphQL wire adapter is currently in a pilot of spring 23 with the expectation of the wire adapter going GA in winter 24. And around that same time frame, there's the expectation that we'll add mutation support in pilot. So basically, you'll be able to update and modify via the at-wire adapter and GraphQL at that point as well.
Gotcha. That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. Well, let's move on to styling. I found Aura to be, shall we say, very brute force in what I had to do in order to get a component to style close to what I found like the native UI to be. Like I had to keep reproducing stuff in that CSS class to kind of like insist on my own styling. How does styling differ in Lightning?
Yeah, so there's actually quite a bit of differences. So for one, again, LWC is based on native web components, which comes with a Shadow DOM. And the TLDR of Shadow DOM is everything's basically encapsulated. So by default, a component, if you don't own it, you actually can't style it by default. Mm-hmm. But of course, you know, we understand people are going to want to be able to style, you know, let's say, for example, the base components. So the SLDS team and the base components team adopted styling hooks, which are actually built on top of a CSS standard called custom properties. And so they have all these styling hooks that you can basically go modify any of the properties, and this will propagate to the various components. So this is probably the most drastic change. Mm-hmm. And then if you leverage, for example, there is, we introduced in LWC a new capability called mixed mode. And this will actually enable you to leverage native Shadow DOM. The reason why this is beneficial is, again, going back to the timing, we introduced a synthetic, basically a polyfill of Shadow DOM, because we had to support IE11, Legacy Edge, you know, all these different browsers.
Right.
But there's new capabilities that come out with native web components that we don't necessarily want to polyfill forever. Mm-hmm. So if you leverage mixed mode, which you can go do today, you can then leverage the part pseudo element, which allows you to hoist these items in your shadow, which allow others to style them. But again, they don't, to your point of, you then don't take a dependency on the DOM structure. You aren't like going and copying all of these, the classes, so that you have the same specificity to ensure that your styles work. So it's a much better way, and it allows the component to say, hey, I'm going to keep my encapsulation, which is very similar to how, what they're trying to achieve with styling hooks, which is, hey, I'm going to keep my DOM, you know, encapsulated. So if I need to change it or add new functionality, it doesn't break your styles.
Yeah.
While at the same time giving you that flexibility. And I know that they're like looking even more into that area. Like if you've got a chance to visit their booth at TDX, they're looking even at like global theming capabilities to unlock that. So stay tuned for that. Super excited about what they're playing around in that space.
Very, very cool. Just a quick jargon check. Synthetic polyfill. First of all, the name of my next techno band, I believe. A synthetic polyfill is basically a code shim that you need to use because a legacy browser like old school IE doesn't have it in its native capacity to do what you need to in order to make the DOM work. Is that an accurate paraphrase?
Yeah. Polyfill is basically, hey, the browser doesn't happen to support this native feature, you know, that maybe other browsers do. And so we've written a JavaScript shim of Shadow DOM, and we call it synthetic Shadow DOM. And we want to slowly chip away at that as more and more browsers support it. So like you may have seen, at the beginning of this year, we ended support for IE11, and we'll continue to kind of, you know, march forward as, you know, technology advances and evolves. So yeah, that is what synthetic Shadow DOM is. It's meant to be a shim for browsers that don't support aspects of native web.
Cool. Now, let's talk logistics a little bit. Let's say I'm listening to this episode. I'm getting sold on the bonuses and advantages of LWC. I haven't moved to there yet. I have yet to build my first Lightning component, shall I say. And I have a hefty amount of Aura that I've been slowly maintaining over the years. What are some good strategies for me to start thinking about moving my org into a Lightning world?
That's an awesome question. And one thing that, like, we all at Salesforce, you know, work on software. So we understand you need to be pragmatic. It can't just be this, you know, hey, tomorrow we're going to go rewrite everything over to LWC. Salesforce itself has not rewritten all of Salesforce from VF and Aura over to LWC.
Right.
We're super pragmatic about it. We're like, hey, what is the most used? Where would they see those largest performance gains? Where are the largest functionalities where we're investing? So one of the key things that I say is, the easiest thing you can probably do is say, hey, all net new components that I go write are going to be in LWC.
Yep.
That's the easiest entry. And then you can start saying, hey, if you have an application or components that are heavily used. So a good example of this at Salesforce is like the record page, right? Like probably the most commonly visited. And we have, you know, related lists and all these other capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
Those are worth considering to move over to LWC, because of the fact that we see on average 20% performance improvements for your users.
Gotcha.
So it's one of those things where it's like, take each kind of component in isolation. The key thing that I recommend is all net new going forward. Build in LWCs, because that's where we're investing. That's where the new features are coming. That's where the tooling time is being spent and so on.
Nice. Are there edge cases that people need to be aware of where maybe it's not, we don't have feature parity on LWC from Aura yet?
Yes, 100%. There's actually very intentional there. We didn't go one-to-one from a functionality perspective and say, hey, everything in Aura needs to be in LWC. But at the same time, we really have been listening to customers and saying, okay, like a good example of this is dynamic. Dynamic components are available in Aura. They're not available in LWC. So some people are, you know, especially like ISVs or people building applications, are kind of like, well, guess what? I don't know which components are going to be there. So while I leverage LWC everywhere else, I have to write an Aura component, at least for this scenario, because I need dynamic component capabilities. And so we actually, over the past year, have taken the time to come up with a design, because one of the reasons we initially didn't have it in there was because it impacted performance. One of the key reasons we leaned into LWC was to improve performance. So we came up with a design for dynamic components that doesn't negatively impact performance. It's actually been in pilot for a few releases.
Okay.
And it should be going GA in which...
Nice. Anything else on the LWC roadmap you want to give a shout out to?
Yeah, so third party web components. I'm like super stoked about this. And one of the key reasons I'm so excited about third-party web components, just for context, is let's say that you have a design system, you maybe authored it in some other language, you know, some other framework, so Vue, Svelte, React, something of that nature, or maybe you even authored it in vanilla native web components. Most of these frameworks actually allow you to compile down to custom elements with probably a very small amount of JavaScript. And so what's great about it is you then can just wrap that in LWC, and now you can just reuse it anywhere within Salesforce. So like if you want to be able to deploy it, use it in, you know, App Builder, we showed this off at the LWC demo booth. Super excited. We've got a ton of interest. Folks have been playing around with it, and they're just super excited about being able to reuse those components. Additionally, you can then kind of go across the web and say, hey, I found a component I really like. I want to be able to bring this on to Salesforce. you then don't have to completely rewrite that into LWC.
Nice.
You can say, cool, it's a native web component, or some examples, like you set up a CI/CD flow to have a build step that compiles it down. Again, most frameworks actually have an API you can call to compile them down to native web components.
And that's our show. Now, before we go, since we did already ask after Greg's favorite non-technical hobby, I asked him, what non-technical hobby would he like to take up?
You know, one that I would actually love to do, except for definitely would not be able to do for a variety of reasons, is rock climbing.
Yeah. Rock climbing.
Like, I'm scared of heights.
Yeah.
And I don't have the greatest of shoulders, so I wouldn't be able to, like, really pick myself up. But it's one of those things that it's, like, such a cool, like, the shots always look amazing. And it kind of breaks my brain, especially when you see them, like, sleeping on the ledge. Like, they set up the tents up. So, like, I love the premise and the idea of it. But, yeah, I would never be able to do it. But, yeah, I think that would be a really cool hobby.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you on all of that. I my fear of heights is not great, but it's definitely it extends to that scenario. I have found out that between my wife and I, she's the one with the upper body strength. Go figure.
Gotcha.
There is a VR game coming out, I think, that's rock climbing, and it's like that might be the neutral ground for me. So
that may, although I've also seen the videos where people are just like on a board and they like. Your brain gets so used to thinking that's real. I don't know. We'll see. I may have to give that a shot because I do have a VR headset, so I may have to give that a shot. But we'll, if I end up falling down crying on my floor, I'll make sure to send you the video.
I want to thank Greg for the great conversation and information, and as always, I want to thank you for listening. Now, if you want to learn more about this show, head on over to developer.salesforce.com/podcast, where you can hear old episodes, see the show notes, and have links to your favorite podcast service. Thanks again, everybody, and I'll talk to you next week.